Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty
lady. Yes, normally it's three sports-loving ladies, but today it's Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks, and we are so pleased to welcome in our guest host for today, former Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie. Josh, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's always fun to see the faces of the ladies that I hear on the radio every day. So thanks for having me.
We love it. When I heard Lauren say, "Have you met Taylor?" Yeah, I met her at the gas station.
True, very
which
true.
Which it is true.
Which, if you follow Taylor on Twitter, she's tweeted out before, like, "Oh man, somebody just recognized me, and I was in my gas station clothes." So was Taylor in her gas station clothes?
I was on my way to work, actually. So okay. I was in normal clothes.
Normal clothes. Which, of course, prompted that tweet, Josh, prompted, what are gas station clothes?
Yeah, what are gas station clothes?
It's just, you know, when you have to run up to the gas station real quick, so you're just like, whatever. Whatever your pajamas that you have on, you slide on the closest shoes you have, hair up, no makeup. That's like my gas station outfit.
I always put on workout clothes no matter where I'm going. Oh. First thing in the morning to walk the dog, go to the grocery store, other than maybe church. That's my go-to. By the way, today we have Brooks Beats. We have three pairs of tickets to go see Jamie Johnson at the Amp in St. Augustine. That comes up Thursday, June 20th. So if you are a country fan and you're a Jamie Johnson fan, you will definitely want to keep listening because we have, like I said, three pairs of tickets to give away to go see Jamie. Are you a country fan, Josh?
I am a country fan. I'm from the country. So
that is very true. Born in Texas.
Born in Texas. So
went to Louisiana.
Went to Louisiana Tech.
So, college in Louisiana.
I'm a country fan.
I love it. Jamie Johnson, I've never seen him in concert, so I'm excited for this concert. I've had friends that went to see him and said he's so good in concert, like so good in person.
Is he newer?
He's not newer. He sings that song Incolor that's been around for a long time. But he doesn't have a lot of other stuff that people necessarily know that's been played on radio. So people will get to hear more of him today as the show goes along. All right, Josh, let's talk Jaguars, obviously, to kick off the program. We had the first season under Doug Peterson, Jaguars make the playoffs. They're one of the last eight teams left in the NFL standing. And then this past year, Trevor gets hurt. The offensive line doesn't play well. The Jaguars was the last 5 out of 6. We end up missing the postseason. Now, moving forward, what are your thoughts as far as Doug and the culture that the Jaguars have built?
I think the culture is great because Doug is extremely passionate about the team and about the organization. And from the words that he said in the media, he wants to get this right. And he is going to remember last season for a long time because of the end of the season collapse. And I think it's only going to motivate him and the team to try and protect Trevor and get pieces around him that are going to protect him because he's our franchise quarterback. And that's number one. That's the priority. And I love Doug. He's been a friend of mine for a long time, and he's a good man and a good person to have calling the shots.
And I do think we haven't really ever heard that before, a coach actually say, like, that, I'm going to live with that for the rest of my life, that losing record and the end of the season, the way that it happened. So that, to me, like you said, that was a surprising comment.
Yeah, when you look at this offseason so far, Josh, do you feel like they've made moves in the right direction? Obviously, Gabe Davis being one, Eric Armstead signing Josh Allen to his contract, which was one of the one things, losing Calvin, but some people were split on that thought so far on kind of what they've done this offseason so far.
Yeah, I think the moves they've made have been in the right direction, for sure. Calvin Ridley going wasn't a surprise to me, to tell you the truth. I wouldn't have been surprised if they had signed him to a big contract, but I think Josh Allen was the priority there. Yeah. It's good to sign your players that were first, second round picks to a second contract because that means you drafted the right way. Mm-hmm. But I think they're definitely moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think Mitch Morse, to Taylor's point, as far as the additions, Mitch Morse is kind of the key, certainly as far as the offense goes. As far as that offensive line, Trevor now is on his third center in this will be his fourth season playing. How difficult do you think that is for him to form that bond with each new center?
It's something that they have to develop a friendship in the offseason. So this is the time. They just got started back with the offseason training, and this is the time where they develop that bond and just start hanging out together and doing things outside of the facility, like going to play golf or going to dinner, going to do things like that really develops like the quarterback center relationship.
Because we know, Taylor, that Trevor has that with Christian Kirk. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of pictures, I feel like, with him and Gabe Davis since Gabe has been here. But I don't know that I've seen that Trevor Mitch, you know, on Instagram kind of thing. And not that that's the be all end all, but it's like, that's what I want to see, to Josh's point. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, and I feel like, obviously, we still have time. It's very early in this process, and there, who knows what's happening in the draft, which I know we'll get to draft talk, too. But I do, it's something that we talk a ton about, especially on here, Josh, about the trenches and how important the trenches are and building out from there. And last season, we saw how miserable on both sides when things started to fail, and that's the offensive line and Trevor getting hurt, them not being able to run the ball, all of that spiraling. And then on the other side, there was no pass rush on the interior whatsoever. Almost all of your sacks came from Trayvon and Josh Allen. So when those things, you feel like if those things can be fixed, you have a team that's already taking a step up. But a lot of the things we talk about, too, are Trevor and how important this season is for Trevor. We're talking about contracts now of what the future looks like for Trevor Lawrence. And so, to me, building a line that is protecting him, being able to have a balance with the run game, and also giving him the opportunity to get the ball out and get it to his weapons and the weapons be where they're supposed to be and catch the ball, really kind of signifies what this season could be. But for you, what would, if you're talking about a successful season for Trevor this year, what would it look like?
It would be him playing all 16, 17 games now, I guess, playing them healthy. And like you said, he got injured three times last year and was able to play. And that shows me that that kid has some grit to him. And he's tough. And they don't want to have to rely on that. They want him to be healthy. So I think getting a good offensive line, getting five guys up there that are going to protect him, that he's close with, and like I said, just doing things in the off season to be comfortable with each other, to be friends with them, but at the same time, knowing that everyone has their own individual job that they have to do to protect their guy behind them.
If you missed the beginning of the show, former Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie is hanging out with us all day today. We're with you until 2 p.m. And then, of course, the Jaguars pre-draft media luncheon kicks off right then with Jaguars general manager Trent Baalke and head coach Doug Peterson. And, of course, the coverage will continue right here on 1010XL. All right, Josh, you talked about Doug Peterson. You've been friends with him for a long time. Have you golfed with him?
I've never played golf with him.
Okay, because he's a pretty good golfer, right?
I've
mean,
heard that,
you are
yes.
too, as everyone knows.
I've heard that as well, yes.
And his son, I think, also is a good golfer,
he
right?
He is. I actually ran into him last week at the stadium because I'm going to do a golf show with the Jaguars.
You
in
are?
There. Yeah, yeah. That's
is fun. This breaking news?
Breaking news.
Yeah. I love it.
So, yeah, we're going to do a golf show because they put in a golf simulator in the actual training area, locker room, which I'm sure a lot of media people have seen, but it's literally in the locker room. So I helped them facilitate putting that in because I have the same one in my house. And
does your wife love that?
She loves it. Yeah, of course she does, because the kids love it too. So
there we go.
So yeah, but I ran into Josh Peterson and talked about it. And so we're going to get quite a few of the players on there in the next couple weeks and shoot some episodes.
I like that. Now, how does golf help them play football?
Well, it takes their mind off of what they're doing. But the beauty of the golf is it actually helps, you know, your football in terms of just little things, just being able to concentrate on one thing at a time and moving on after you hit a bad shot. You hit a good shot, it gives you confidence, that type of thing. And the Jags actually have a lot of good golfers in the facility, not just the players, but coaches as well. And Doug is one of them, and Trent is one of them as well.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that about Trent. I've heard – I want to say that – I forget. Is it Bethard really good golfer?
CJ, yeah.
Yeah, CJ's a good, really good golfer. I feel like I've heard that – there's one of the offensive linemen, too.
I was about
too.
To say, is it Walker Little?
He's a golfer as well. Yeah.
So he's on the agenda for one of the guys that we're going to get in there.
I love it. When you, because that's something, even in hockey, a lot of the hockey players play golf in the off season, and I know obviously that's a little closer to it, but I think also a big thing in golf is
do they fight on the golf courses?
Swinging clubs at each other.
They're big people.
That's actually
clubs,
how they lose teeth. It's on the golf course. It's not actually in the hockey ring.
But I know, because for me, I'm a terrible golfer and I get frustrated. But I guess that's part of it too, Josh, being able to not get frustrated in those moments, because we saw it kind of happen in the football season this last year when frustration started to build up and how that happened to the team. So golf in that aspect, to your point of how it helps on the actual football field later.
Yeah, I mean, golf is an amazing sport, and I picked it up whenever I got drafted here because we're in Florida. The weather this time of year is perfect. Mm-hmm. And this is about the time whenever I started playing golf here. And there's a charity event, it seems like, every Monday mm-hmm. of the year this time of year. And that's why I fell in love with it. And a lot of guys that come here, if they've already been playing golf, then they get invited to these events and fall in love with it just like I did. And it teaches you a lot about yourself and a lot about how to control your emotions and how to relieve those emotions at some point by maybe throwing a club, throwing a ball, or, you know, punching another player. But, you know, that's the beauty of golf. And it definitely relates to football.
Now, does Trevor play golf that often?
He does, yeah.
Okay, and how's he?
He's, from what I hear, he's pretty good. I haven't played golf with him yet, but we have that on the horizon coming up.
Are you playing on Monday in a charity golf tournament?
I am, yes.
Okay, interesting.
Oh, Monday. That's what I was about to say. JP Shadrick told me to ask you about the Pacelli tournament on Monday.
I don't want to hear from JP. Trash talking. Yeah, I ran into him a couple days ago at the stadium, and he told me that they beat us by one shot. So that kind of irks me.
Because you're competitive.
Because he tagged you, too, so I was like.
I know.
Have you ever seen a facility like the Miller Electric Center?
Well, not that I've ever been a part of. Okay. I mean, when I played, the facilities were a lot less than they are now. Yeah. That's a good way to put it, I guess. But
there was no indoor then either.
There was no indoor. I mean, we had to deal with the weather, especially during training camp. If there was thunder and lightning, we're coming inside and having to, you know, do things a lot differently than we would do outside. But it's amazing. I mean, the facility is state of the art, and I'm just glad that Shad Khan was here to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And that's certainly a big conversation surrounding our city right now is mm-hmm. the stadium renovation. And hopefully this time next year, we're talking about, it went past, everything's great. And the, you know, construction starts at this point in time, the 2026 season, I guess. And it's a thing of the past. Like, we're not even discussing whether or not it should be done. That's my hope, is that maybe sometime this fall it's signed off on and we all are excited about the stadium of the future.
Yeah, and because when you look at, I mean, everything, when you look at some of the teams, and this goes for all sports, because I know, Scobie, we were talking before the show about the stadiums you visit. You're doing a little baseball tour now. And so there's just certain ones you go to that are different. Mm-hmm. And you want Jacksonville to be that, because, number one, people come to Florida, but you give them something extra to come to when it's a game, when you're talking about a stadium now that has things to do around it. And when you walk inside, it's just this magnificent experience. It adds a whole other level, and you want people to come here and realize, okay, Jags are going to move to London. We want to stop hearing that eventually. And I feel like the stadium is going to take it to that level.
Oh, for sure. And it helps with potential free agent signings. Mm-hmm. If they bring in, you know, a top 30 potential draft pick, they see the facility and they fall in love with it and they want to be here. And in my opinion, that's why we haven't re-signed a lot of first-round picks mm-hmm. over the years, because formerly we had these facilities that were worse than they had in college. If they went to an LSU or Alabama or something like that, where they had these state-of-the-art technology, they had all this, you know, little things that help a player do what they need to do on a daily basis. Now the Jags have it, mm-hmm. and there's no reason, there's no excuses now.
Yeah, I think about Urban Meyer, and that's really the great legacy that he left.
The only one.
Right, the only good thing that occurred, I suppose, is the fact that, the Miller Electric Center, people decided that, you know, when he was hired, he made sure that people decided that we need this. And it is, like you said, it is gorgeous. And we had the indoor with Daly's place, but for punters, obviously, like for Logan Cook.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah, he hit the roof all the time. Mm-hmm. And so, now with the outdoor and the new indoor with the Miller Electric, it's just so great. All right, going back to Trevor Lawrence, in your evaluation over the past 3 years, where have you seen him grow?
I mean, I've seen him grow as a leader. I mean, obviously, me being a kicker, I don't know the mindset. I don't know anything of what he goes through on a daily basis. But I've seen him grow as a leader, and that's what you need. You need three or four key position players on mm-hmm. your team to be leaders, and he is a leader. And whenever I hear people badmouth him whatsoever, I just come back to the fact that he's a leader. He was a leader in college. He's a leader. He's a winner, and he's going to find a way to win. And he brings people up around him, and that's why I'm glad he's where he is.
Do you think the expectations, because of that generational word that was thrown around when he was drafted, and kind of the expectations that, hey, in year one, possibly two, he should be winning, going deep into the playoffs. Do you think that, not particularly for Trevor, was too high of a standard, but for Jacksonville in general to expect a guy coming off a team who just had terrible season mm-hmm. to come in and win right away?
No, I really don't think it should be that way, because, I mean, typically a first-round draft pick is going to a bad team mm-hmm. or a top first round pick is going to a bad team. So they have to build around him, and that's what they're trying to do. It's not going to be an overnight cure. It's not going to be a Band-Aid on something. It's going to take quite a few years, but mm-hmm. I think we're building to that, and we're going to build around him.
What about the AFC South in general? Because I think that was a talk last season. A lot of people kind of felt like the Jags could cruise through last season because rookie quarterbacks mm-hmm. all the way around, and they felt like a lot of these teams had a ton of building to do. And then you see the Texans come in and CJ Stroud perform the way he did. Even the Titans and Colts still perform better than a lot of people thought. What do you see about the AFC South, and what does that show the Jags that, hey, you can't just sit and kind of wait around?
Oh, we're going to have a formidable AFC South for sure. I mean, like you said, with CJ Stroud, he's a stud, and they've only – made that team better this offseason. So it's going to be tough. But I think we have the right people in place to make a run for the AFC South. It's not going to be easy by any means. Yeah. But they need the big players to play big when they need to.
When you were on the team, making the playoffs was something
difficult.
That happened.
Difficult.
It was difficult, but it was something that certainly happened. Mm-hmm. And then there was that long drought until 2017.
Oh, yeah.
And then another drought, shorter, and then Jags make the playoffs in 2022, and the way last season happened. Is there a winning DNA in other franchises that doesn't exist here, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a cultural thing. It really, like I said, it just starts with the big position players. I mean, you need a franchise quarterback. You need a couple good defensive ends, you need good cornerbacks, you need a good running back, you need a couple good wide receivers,
mm-hmm.
and then you need the guys that protect them. But you have to have a core of guys, in my opinion, that basically raise the level of play for the team. And a lot of teams have that, and a lot of teams have the culture, like the Patriots. I mean, they were a dynasty for 20 years mm-hmm. or so because they had Tom Brady. And that's what we need here. We need to build around Trevor Lawrence, protect him as much as possible, and give him the best possibility of being the best Trevor he can be.
Who would you say right now is in that nucleus of sorts? Obviously Trevor. Josh Allen?
Josh
Allen, Lewakin.
Yeah, for sure. Lewakin.
Maybe Tyson
Christian
Campbell?
Kirk.
Christian Kirk, okay.
Evan Ingram, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, defensive backs, I think – a lot of people are saying we need to draft a defensive back early.
Correct. A lot of people say corner at 17 mm-hmm. or bust.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I do like the guys that we have there. But you can never stop trying to build. And mm-hmm. that's what NFL teams try and do, is get the best possible players they can at those most important positions.
Well, I think also we saw last year how critical depth is too, because once you start seeing some of these guys drop out and the defense drastically changed, and I know there wasn't a ton of injuries there, but there were still off and on some guys dealing with injuries, but offensively a ton of injuries and not being able to have that depth to come in, it hit them hard. And that's why, to me, when you get to this time of year, free agency, yes, important, and it seems like Trent Baalke and the Jags have been pretty successful when it comes to free agency, other than last year when they didn't do anything. But the free agency-wise, pretty good. The draft has always kind of been the question of how they are finding the talent and then also developing the talent, which has been important, and it's been a thing we feel like the Jags haven't been able to do. What factors into that when it comes to being able to get these players, spot their talent, and bring them onto the right team, and then also develop them and make them into a second contract type of guy?
It's just little things. And like we're talking about, even the facility makes a huge difference mm-hmm. in that, and wanting to get players here and the ability to get players here, because players want to be in a culture that they agree with and have a head coach, a GM, position coaches that they agree with. And that doesn't always work, because you have 50-something players in one building trying to come to a common goal, and that doesn't always happen. And that's why the top teams stay at the top and they're in the playoffs every year. And that's what we're trying to get to. And it takes a lot of hard work. It takes really good coaching. It takes players that are willing to buy into the system. And sometimes that's not easy, but that's the goal.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think there's always those rifts within the locker room. Obviously, you've been in several. How do the players handle it? We know how a coach is going to basically tell the players, like, you guys need to figure it out. How do the players handle that when there are clear divisions?
Well, you have to have really good leaders in the locker room, guys on every side of the ball, offense, defense, special teams. You need guys that are going to hold each other accountable. And if they see you doing something wrong, if they hear about you doing something wrong, if they know you're not working as hard as you should, you need players to hold you accountable. And that's the way that good teams work. When I got traded to Pittsburgh in 2015, they had leaders in that locker room and they held each other accountable. And that's how they stay sustainable for a long time.
And that's certainly a Mike Tomlin effect, which I think from our perspective, it's like crazy that Steelers fans wanted Tomlin fired when he's never had a losing season, and look at some of the quarterbacks that he's had to deal with. But that's a conversation
for
another day.
Well, the fact that organization's had like three coaches in,
in 50 years.
Yeah, and we've had three in the last 5 years, basically. But, you know, that it's fine. There are a lot of differences between Pittsburgh and Jacksonville. Josh, by the way, are we keeping you from golfing today?
Well, you see how I'm dressed, obviously.
So are you going to the golf course after?
It's always just what if. What if someone asked me to play golf?
So always be ready, just in case.
Just be ready. Have the clubs in the back of the truck and be ready.
I think that's so smart. And your boys now, you said, are 12 and 9?
Yep.
That's amazing. And do they golf?
They do not golf.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, golf is a weird thing. You got to try it when you want, and if you don't like it, I don't force it on them.
That makes sense. What are their sports?
You don't want them to be better than you at golf.
I would love for them.
He's like, actually, let's do it.
He's like, actually, I would love to be their caddy on the PGA Tour, because if they're better than me, that's where they're going to be.
That is true.
But yeah, it's something that I don't force on them. But they play baseball and soccer like I did growing up, and they're both very good at both of those, and so I encourage that right now.
Do we have a future kicker?
Both of them to kick. So it's kind of fun to see that and go out in the backyard and have them kick. And they're not at the age yet where they have the leg strength to you know, impress me very much. But
good job.
Yeah, good job. You can make it from 15 yards.
I don't think my leg strength impressed Josh either back when he taught me field goals at Bishop Kenny a few years ago.
Well, you have to have played soccer at some point to develop the leg strength. And
which I did for a lot of years. Yeah. It's just been a long time in between. So if you were to line up, like after properly warming up, if you were to line up right here, right now, and kick a field goal, how far would you kick it?
Oh, boy. I could probably still make it from 50.
Wow.
There you go.
I would now need like a chiropractor the next day.
After. We've got several.
Okay.
I think that's fairly impressive to me. So I do think, so your boys are still impressed by your kicking ability.
Oh, yeah. I'll line one up every now and again when they're kicking and launch it over the house, and they're laughing about it. But yeah, I'm sore the next day. That's for sure.
It's like Scheffler at the Players. You'll just need massages in between each kick.
I'm like Tiger after a round. Like, my team's going to help me get better.
The reason I'm so amazed that your kids are this age is I remember a tweet. It was so funny that you had, obviously now many, many years ago, I think your oldest might have been like 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. And Josh put his wife's shorts on the bed next to his son's shorts. And he said, whose shorts are whose?
Yeah.
Hashtag tiny shorts, because they literally were about the same size.
They're finally getting a little bit bigger than my wife's shorts. So I can figure that out.
I love that. All right. When we come back, we will continue our countdown to the NFL draft. Eric Dalala, the lead writer at DenverBroncos.com, will join us on who he thinks the Broncos will select with their pick. You are listening to Helmets and Heels with Josh Scobie, former Jaguars kicker, on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
The countdown to the draft is on.
I hope you're ready.
Who'll be off the board when the Jaguars pick? Let's find out.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. Taylor Dahl is here. I'm Lauren Brooks. Former Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie is hanging out with us today as Mia O'Brien is on vacation today and tomorrow. We are winding our way down to pick eventually 17. That's where the Jaguars pick. But of course, before that, we have to find out what the teams in front of the Jaguars will do. We chatted Vikings yesterday. Today we're going to talk Broncos with Eric Dallala, the lead writer at DenverBroncos.com. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, you guys got it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, so we know there's been a lot of change, to put it mildly, there in Denver. What do you think as far as, not necessarily the pick, but what do you think as far as this upcoming season is going to hold for Sean Payton and the gang?
Yeah, you know, I think they're all about building this thing. And they were asked, that Sean Payton, George Payton, owner and CEO Greg Penner, they were asked at the NFL annual meeting a few weeks ago, you know, is this a rebuilding season? And I think the theme was they are building toward long-term success, but they still do expect to be successful this year as well. This is a team with Sean Payton we saw last year, a well-coached team, a team that's going to fight, that's going to be tough. Certainly, they altered the way they did training camp, the way they did in-season practices, and I think you saw that pay off in several games last year, went on a little five-game win streak midway through the season. And so I do think this is going to be a more competitive team than maybe people expect next season, going to give teams some issues. But that being said, they are still building toward that ultimate goal of being able to compete for championships.
Now, I think obviously one of the hot topics is saying goodbye to Russell Wilson, still paying him quite a bit of money for him to go play elsewhere. But it seems like that was a decision that had kind of been in the works for a little bit, rumored around. How much of that do you believe was Sean Payton's choice of just kind of wanting to move on and find his own quarterback?
Well, I think when they made the move to start Jared Stidham with a couple games left last season, Sean Payton said, hey, this is about trying to kickstart the offense. It wasn't performing at a level that he was pleased with. Certainly a tough performance there against the Patriots late in the year that really knocked the Broncos out of postseason consideration, even though they weren't eliminated until the following week. And he said, listen, I can't change everything on offense. I can't change every single player or replace everybody. And so I'm making a move at quarterback to try to get that spark. There were some things that were better over the following week, but I think at the end of the day, the Broncos just weren't seeing the output they needed to and decided to go in a different direction. And one thing is that, you know, with the contract, some teams maybe say, hey, we're going to keep Russell Wilson because of the commitment we've given him. And Greg Penner, again, the owner and CEO, he said at his end of season press conference, this is going to be a decision that's made independently of any financial implications. And Sean Payton echoed that at the annual meeting where he said it was not a difficult decision in regards to the financial hit, and that they made this decision from a football standpoint. And obviously there are consequences that come with that from a salary cap standpoint, but they made a football first move. And now they're trying to find that next guy, and we'll see if it comes at number 12 or if it comes elsewhere. But as Sean Payton said at the combine, they've got to figure that out and they've got to hit on this next guy. It's important for the stability of the franchise. It's important for the team's ability to win and to kind of return to where this franchise expects to be.
Would you be surprised, Eric, if Jarrett Stidham starts week one?
You know, I don't think I'd be surprised, just because if you add a rookie quarterback, I would think that there's going to be, you know, at the very least, a competition. We know the Broncos value Jarrett Stidham. He was a priority a year ago in free agency. Sean Payton said, you know, over a year ago that the Broncos kind of viewed him as having starter level upside. And then this year he kind of said, oh, I don't know if we've seen Stidham's ceiling. And so clearly they want to still see him work over the course of this offseason. I think it'll depend on, you know, who do the Broncos get at quarterback. I would imagine, and they've said this, whether it's in the draft or via free agency or a trade, they're still going to add somebody else. Currently, it's just Stidham and Ben DiNucci on the roster. But yeah, I mean, Sean Payton phrased it as, I don't know if he's in the driver's seat. He said there isn't necessarily a driver's seat right now, but he's going to have the opportunity to compete for that job. And certainly because of his experience, I don't think it would be a surprise. I don't know if he's the favorite. I don't know if there is a favorite right now, but I don't think I'd be surprised if he's the starter week one.
Now let's take a look at that 12th pick. It's one of the picks, I feel like one of the first one we really get to that has been mocked all sorts of positions. I've seen offensive line, I've seen quarterback, I've seen defense. So where do you feel the Broncos are leaning with that pick? I know quarterback probably is looming, so it depends what goes ahead. But what are they kind of staring at for that number 12?
Yeah, there's a lot of options. You're right. And I think the exciting thing is that because the Broncos have a few different holes they need to fill, they could really go several different directions and feel pretty good about it. Sean Payton said at the annual meeting, it's not out of the question that they trade up to go get somebody. Obviously, if they jump up pretty high, you'd expect that that would be for a quarterback. But you're right, a tackle could make sense, an edge rusher, kind of a premier guy could make sense. Is it along the defensive line? Certainly, we've seen cornerback mocked to the Broncos quite a bit as well to pair opposite Pat Surtain. Brock Bowers from Georgia is a guy that's been linked recently to Denver in some of these mock drafts. And so I think the honest answer is myself and a lot of the media members around Denver that I've talked to is there's a lot of things that could happen next Thursday night that would not surprise us, just because there's a lot of areas where frankly the Broncos could really use kind of a blue chip type player, and that would upgrade their roster. So I don't know if it's as simple as it is for some teams where you say, hey, they've got to go offense here, they've got to go defense here, they've got to go left tackler, they've got to get an edge rusher. I don't think for Denver it's quite that simple, and I'm sure for teams picking behind them that may make projecting a little bit more difficult.
Have you heard about a particular quarterback that they've seemed to like a little bit more that's a realistic option? Because I know one thing people talk about is possibly J.J. McCarthy falling to that spot. Is there one, though, that you've heard they lean towards, they like a little bit more?
Well, I think the thing that you see a lot in the media right now, a lot of these mock drafts, is that Bo Nix is a guy that keeps popping up just because of his processing ability. He seems like a fit in a Sean Payton system, according to everything that all the experts say. So he's a guy that maybe you look at. But they've met with all these guys, right? Michael Penix had a meeting with him at the Combine, and he said that meeting was one of the toughest because they showed him some of his bad plays and what were you thinking here? What happened here?
Ouch.
kind of a good test, I think, for some of these younger guys. And then, you mentioned J.J. McCarthy. Sean Payton did say at the annual meeting that the Broncos had hosted a private workout for him. Is he letting that slip because it's a genuine slip and he's just answering a question about J.J. McCarthy, or is that a smokescreen? I think that's part of what makes this time of year fun, where you get some of this information, then you've got to decipher, okay, why did they let that slip? Sean Payton and George Payton have their pre-draft press conference in just about an hour and a half here in Denver, and I'm sure that'll just create more uncertainty when, that's always, it's exciting for us. Every team does one, and it's exciting, but it just creates a little more confusion, and in some ways is just, which GM, which coach can do the best job at misleading the media.
Everybody
there for 15 to 20 minutes. I think really I wouldn't put anything off the table just because they've worked with so many of these guys. They've talked to them at the Combine. I think a name that the media folks in Denver have mentioned is, if they wait a little bit, is a Spencer Rattler, mm-hmm. on day two. So just a lot of different options here, and I think people will be interested to see what happens.
So, Eric, this is Josh Scobie, former Jaguars kicker. We're going to talk about kickers for a minute, if you're okay with that. I know it's
very
boring.
Yeah, I love
boring,
it. Let's do it.
Well, we had Brandon McManus here last year. He had good season, had some kicks that, we wish he would have made. Came from Denver. Will Lutz was potentially going to sign here with the Jags and kind of backed out of a contract and decided to stay with Denver. In your opinion, why do you think he decided to stay here and not, or stay with Denver and not sign with the Jags?
Yeah, I don't know how kind of all the negotiations went down, but I will say I know he's comfortable with Sean Payton. That's kind of how he got his start, and I'd imagine just having that stability and not having to jump from place to place is probably a big benefit. I would imagine as a kicker in particular, just having that routine, staying with what you know. He had a little bit of a shaky start to the season last year in Denver, and then really settled in, made some big kicks, got a second chance at the one in Buffalo thanks to a 12-man-on-the-field penalty that helped to pull out a big win there on Monday Night Football. But he was a big piece of some of those wins last year. And so from a Broncos standpoint, they definitely wanted him back. Then I'd imagine from his standpoint, just the familiarity with Sean Payton, with being in Denver, that was a big reason for him coming back here and you know, it did seem like he was gone, and then he was back, and I think Broncos fans are happy that he's returning.
Yeah, he's a really good kicker, and he can thank me for his career getting started in New Orleans, because I was signed there in 2016, and they decided to release me, and then they eventually signed him, and he went on to have the career that he's had so far. So you're welcome, Will Lutz.
That's great.
Oh, I love the kicker stories.
Yeah, kicker stories are so boring.
I love it, though. Eric, around here we've picked first, like fourth, seventh, fifth. I mean, we pick a lot of times in the top 10, and then we've also picked 29th in the last few years.
Like it took forever because we were so used
it to it. It did take forever, Taylor. You're absolutely right. So 17 is a weird spot for us. Do you feel the same way? I know you said it's kind of fun. I feel like fun is put in quotation marks when it comes to the draft. Nothing's really fun until the draft actually starts because there's so many smoke screens like you were talking about. But do you feel like 12 is kind of a weird spot?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, the Broncos are just happy to be picking in the first round because it's been a couple of years here. Last year, the Broncos didn't pick till 63. I think the year before, it was 64. So, you know, talk about a long wait.
Yeah.
This is going to feel much better, I think, if the Broncos do end up picking at 12. But, you know, the Broncos obviously have not had a lot of success the last few years. They haven't made the playoffs since winning the Super Bowl, haven't had that winning season since 2016. But they haven't, you know, with the exception of 2018 when they picked fifth and took Bradley Chubb, they haven't had like that top five pick. And it's always kind of been around this area. They picked 15th when they took Jerry Jeudy, 20th in 2017 when they took Garrett Bowles. I think back in 2019, they had the 10th pick and traded back to 20. And so it's kind of always been in this teens area. And so that's, I think, where, you know, do you, with the run on quarterbacks that's expected, if a defensive player doesn't go off the board until 7 or 8, do you have, you know, does it feel a little earlier than it actually is at 12? And do you get the chance to add a blue chip player that in a quote unquote normal draft, you might not get to at 12? You know, we've seen the Chargers say, hey, the fifth pick is really the first pick, which is a nice way to spin things, I think. But yeah, at 12, there's just the opportunity to get maybe a good player that wouldn't be available otherwise. But, you know, there's also the fact that if you want one of those top quarterbacks, you might have to trade up to get him. And if you decide a guy like Bo Nix or Michael Penix or, you know, whoever else is your guy, do you risk trading down from 12 and trying to get that guy later? Do you just say, hey, if that's our guy, we're going to take him at 12 and be okay with that? Traditionally, Sean Payton has not traded down a lot. And so those are all things to kind of consider at 12, and certainly just the way that the Broncos could be aggressive, at least. I'll be waiting here at our training facility, kind of on pins and needles, just ready at any second in case they do decide to make a move up the board.
Eric, final one for you before we let you go. What are the vibes around Denver? Because we talk about here in Jacksonville, there's been a whole lot of losing in recently, and the 2017 season, and then a couple seasons ago, there was some hope there. But so there's just that hope of, okay, when are we going to find this consistency and win football games every year on a year-to-year basis? And obviously Denver had that for several years from around 2011 to 2015, won a Super Bowl, lost a Super Bowl, but was winning the division pretty consistently in that time. So what are the vibes now? Is there a little bit of impatience there, or do they know that they'll get back on track?
Well, it's been a long 7 or 8 years here. I would definitely agree with that. I think that for a while, the Broncos, especially 2016, 2017, when they still had some pieces from that Super Bowl roster, they tried for some quick fixes. Then they tried to get a young quarterback in Drew Lock. They made the trade for Russell Wilson, which I know didn't work out necessarily, but at the time, everybody nationally was like, this is a great move for Denver. And so I think it's a swing that a lot of people would have taken. I think now the vibe is just kind of a belief right now in Sean Payton that he's going to be able to turn this thing around with the help of George Payton. You saw a more competitive team last year. You saw a team that did the fundamentals well, didn't beat themselves a lot of the time, which you looked at this team in 2022, that was not necessarily the case. And so I think fans were pleased with that element of it. And now they realize, hey, you know, this might be a little tough and it's going to take some work to get back to where they want to be, but Sean Payton, George Payton, they've made some tough but necessary decisions. And I think fans overall understand that this is now being built the correct way. And it might require some patience, but ultimately that's what's going to get you to where you need to go rather than skipping steps or trying to put band-aids on things. I think the Broncos are embracing building this the right way.
Good stuff. We really appreciate it, Eric. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. You guys have a good one.
All right. Thanks, you too. That is Eric Dalala, lead writer at DenverBroncos.com on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. He is at Eric Dalala on Twitter. That would be at A-R-I-C-D-I-L-A-L-L-A. And if that's too much for you, just go to the Broncos website. You'll find him right there. We have our first Brooks Beats giveaway coming up, so keep it right here on Helmets and Heels on 10 to Next on 92.5 FM.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
I was just a normal guy. Life was just a 9-to-5 with bills and pressure piled up to the sky. She never asked, she knew I'd been.
This is a little ditty called High Cost of Living by Jamie Johnson. We're playing this because we have another pair of tickets to give away to go see him at the Amp in St. Augustine on Thursday, June 20th. If you want to go, be caller number 2 at 641-1010. Caller number 2 at 641-1010. Again, if you don't win the tickets, they are on sale now. You can buy them at Ticketmaster.com. Have you all heard this song before?
Of course.
Okay.
I don't think I've heard this one.
Yeah. Like I said, his only one that's really ever been played on radio is In Color, but it's because radio, as we all know, plays a lot more of the, like, poppy country and less of the, like, what I call outlaw country or real country, however you want to term it.
Yeah, this is, like, real country. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It feels like 70s, 80s.
Yes, and I love, like, Hank Williams and Waylon Jennings and all the old stuff. I got to see Merle Haggard in concert one time. That was
at
Florida Theater. I am a little bit older than you, Josh.
I shouldn't ask that. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I think I'm older than you.
Same age.
What year did you... Actually, we might be the same age. What year did you graduate from La Tech?
2003. So I'm...
Okay, so you're 1 year older than me because I graduated from Florida in 04.
Okay.
So I feel so much...
You were held back. So,
yes, that's the story we'll go with. All right, we've got former Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie hanging out with us until 2 o'clock. The NextEL primetime takes over. We do have one more pair of tickets to go see Jamie Johnson to give away before the end of the show, so keep it right here. All right, let's get into some special teams talk. And in order to do that, RJ Sunners, our fabulous producer, put this together for you earlier today.
59 yards out, a franchise best and personal best. The snap replacement, the kick up on the way. Scobie's got plenty of distance.
He crushed it.
And he got it from 59 yards away for the win. Cowboy!
Okay, calm down.
That was, of course, Brian Sexton on the call. I believe Jeff Loggeman there saying, crushed it.
That's my favorite part of it. It's when he says that.
Yes.
He knew. And the best part is I didn't crush it because
this is what we're here for.
I had to look at it to be like, oh, crap, did I hit it hard enough? But I hit it just good enough.
So. I was just about to say, how quickly do you realize normally, like, oh, it's going in?
Immediately.
The minute it hits your
foot. It's the feel off of your foot.
Yeah.
I mean, if any athlete that plays long enough, any sport, you know as soon as you do something whether it's good or not. Mm-hmm. And that one I was like, we'll see. And fortunately it had a couple yards left on it, because normally, like, you get me in that situation, it's going to be good from, you know, 5 to 10 yards. Mm-hmm. But that one was just a couple yards, but fortunately, it was straight and went down the middle.
It was so much fun. I was in the stands just as a fan back then, the 2010 season. That was, of course, against the Colts. Was that your favorite kick, or was it more playoffs against the Steelers?
Man, there's so many, like, fun kicks. That probably is the most fun individual kick because I had so many people in town for that game, and it was at home.
Yes.
Because I had hit a couple long game-winning kicks against the Colts earlier in my career that were at the Colts. So I didn't get to really celebrate with the home fans, but that one was special because I got to celebrate with friends and family that were in town. And, you know, afterwards going out in the parking lot and running into people, like, I'd stop my car and signed autographs and did all the fun stuff. And
yes.
So that one was a lot of fun. Probably not my most amazing game that I had. I would say it was probably 2011. We played the Ravens on Monday night, mm-hmm. and I had all the points. It was like 12 to 7, probably an extremely boring game for everyone else but me.
But that happened multiple times in your career that it you had did. All yeah. the points. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, twice on Monday Night Football, I had all the points, and we won.
That's why you're a Jaguars legend.
Extremely boring. But that one was funny because our first son had just been born, and my wife was at home. She wasn't at the game. And so I called her after. It was Monday Night Football game, so it's midnight whenever mm-hmm. I called her to, you know, get my congratulations from her, and she was asleep. And she didn't. She said she turned it off at halftime. And so
like
that,
you said it was boring.
It put it into perspective. I'm like, what's more important?
Yeah,
I think
she needs her
was,
sleep with a newborn
yeah,
baby.
She's like, yeah, how'd you do? I'm like, I did pretty good.
I scored everything.
I'll show you tomorrow.
What is your mindset in games like that? Are you like, come on, guys, can you score a touchdown or just whatever? Let's go offense.
That's a good question because as a kicker, you have to have the mindset like, I want them to stall out on third down mm-hmm. so I have this opportunity. Because if you don't have that mindset, then you're not really ready for the kick.
Yeah.
So you're like wanting them to stall out. You want the team to win, obviously. Right. But you still want to have the opportunity to go out there, especially for a long kick.
Yeah. Because you don't want to all of a sudden be like, all right, well, now you got to go kick a 57 and you're just chilling.
And yeah. there were a couple times in my career where I had that mindset where I was like, all right, I hope we get this first down. Mm-hmm. And then I miss a kick. So I tried to not ever let that happen again.
It has to be such a fun dynamic to be special teams on an NFL team. You're almost kind of isolated amongst yourselves, so you become, I'm sure, really good friends with the long snapper and the punter.
Yep.
But at the same time, you are so crucial to the team in those big moments.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it like you said, I mean, we're not – kickers and punters aren't really football players. We're not because we're not sitting in meetings all day long like they do. They have to learn so much. The quarterback has to know what every single player is doing on the field at any given moment. A kicker just has to do this job. This is what our job is. And so there were times I literally forgot what direction the coach told me to kick it. So I would just kick it straight and hope for a touchback. It's the beauty of the job. And that's why it's a great game to play because everyone has their individual aspects that they have to be their best at. And mm-hmm. concentrate on that and not worry about what else is going on in the game.
So as a Florida Gators fan alum, watching last year, the special teams were not up to par. And
I heard about that, yes.
So that's what I have to know in a serious question, though. When two number threes run on the field during special teams, what is supposed to happen at that moment?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Florida had two of the same jersey number because in college,
you
can have two of the same jersey number on the team.
That's
but true. Obviously but never on the field at the same time.
Retired jerseys, I guess they eventually have to do that.
Yeah, and so Florida had, this was in the first week against Utah, Florida had two number threes mm-hmm. run on the field at the same time for a special teams play. How is that allowed? I mean, that's not supposed to happen. So how does that happen? Isn't there a coach that's supposed to have a check or something?
You would hope so. I mean, there's a reason why they had so many penalties, you know, for
correct.
Too many men on the field, yep. not enough men on the field
right.
type of thing. And that's just something.
Not
that,
enough men.
Yeah.
yeah. 10 men on the field.
Yeah.
It's very strange, but it happens. It even happens in the NFL. So it's just checks and balances. Like you have certain people that are going, all right, they're counting, literally
right.
pointing their finger going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And that's just how it works.
We're talking about the evolution kind of special teams too and kickers and how now guys feel like a 50 they can make no problem mm-hmm. most of the time. If you have a kicker that can't, you're like, man, his leg's weak because he can't hit 50.
I love hearing that. Yeah.
50 yards. What is that? Is that just now because of training that happens now? They've just been able to find more guys that have that strong leg. They know what to focus on in that aspect now. Maybe more, less accuracy, more strength.
Yeah, I think, it's evolved so much. Even when I played, 10 years ago was my last year, the kickers have gotten so much better because of training, because of coaches that they can utilize. I used a coach my last few years in the league, and he helped me out tremendously. So it's just the evolution of mm-hmm. the kicker, and that's why they're trying to make it more difficult on kickers in the NFL by moving the extra point back 13 yards. Mm-hmm. Like, we appreciate you for all the work you've done. You're yeah. really good. We're going to make it harder on you. Meanwhile, quarterbacks are getting it easier on them. Yeah. If you literally just breathe on them, it's mm-hmm. a 15-yard flag. So that's just the way it is. Yeah. And it's cool to see because these kickers now are so, so good. And like you said, if you see them miss a 50-yarder, you wonder, like, what's wrong with them? We mm-hmm. should cut them. But that's just the standard that they've set.
Yeah, last season, my cousin is a Jaguars fan. She lives in Denver, ironically, since we just talked to Eric Dalala of DenverBroncos.com. But she would text me multiple times for each game, cut Brandon McManus, cut Brandon McManus. I mean, she was over him. And obviously, eventually now, like you mentioned to Eric, we've moved on. And now the Jags tried to get Will Lutz, but he ended up staying. And so how do you feel about the current kicking situation?
I mean, we have two good guys in the building. It's Joey Sly and mm-hmm. Riley
Patterson. Kicker and Riley Patterson, who we've had
jacked.
Before.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how that helps kicking of football. It probably doesn't. I mean, I tried to get jacked in my career, but yeah, I like.
That's also why you play golf like Tiger now.
Correct, yeah. But I think both of the guys are very capable. Riley's a good friend of mine. And I wasn't sure why we got rid of him mm-hmm. until I spoke to a couple people that they were worried about his leg strength and they mm-hmm. couldn't make 50-yard field goals. And that's why they signed Brandon McManus. But I think Riley, in my opinion, should be the guy because he's really good, really accurate, might not have the strongest leg. You can get Logan Cook to kick off and alleviate
that's, I think
that.
That's exactly what the issue was, is the kickoffs.
Yeah, but now that the rule has changed, exactly. it doesn't even matter. I mean, you could throw a linebacker out there to kick off, and it would be the same result. But I
Let's
I
do
like,
that. That'd be fun.
that happened one time in my career because of me. But, yeah, I think the guys we have in place, they're going to compete, and they're going to – yeah, both of them have a lot of NFL experience, so – I think we'll be good at that position.
There was a point in time that Logan Cook was the best player on this team.
Yes.
There was
it's
a point
not
in time,
anymore, thankfully. Yeah. But well,
it was our player of the week several times a couple
hey,
years
Hey, our long snapper is the best person on our team right now. Only all-pro player on the
yeah,
team.
Yeah, that is true.
For good reason.
Way to go, Ross.
Yeah, well done, Ross. But, yeah, I mean, the specialist positions have gotten so good in the past decade that it kind of blows my mind how good they are. And – It just shows you how hard these guys work at their craft. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fortunately, we have two really good ones right now and two battling for a spot, and we'll see what happens.
Speaking of, because we were talking about the evolution and you just mentioned the new kickoff rules. So what are your feelings on that? Because I know the gist of it. They want to – player safety, they say, is the main thing.
Yeah,
they want whatever. More points scored. That's what they want. Scoring, that's what it seems like they're kind of leaning towards, but it's definitely away with what we once knew of a kickoff. So how do you feel about it?
I had multiple people reach out to me wanting an answer to that, like local sports writers asking mm-hmm. my opinion on it, and it's the same thing as moving the extra point from the 10-yard line to a 33-yarder. It's you're trying to make it more difficult on the person that's gotten really good at their job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of phasing out the kicker. And it kind of stinks, you know. What do we talk about? It's called football for a reason. We're kicking it with our foot. Yeah.
And you guys score the most points a lot of the time. Well, most of the time,
always,
every team. Yeah.
Always. The top 50 players in the history of the NFL scoring-wise are kickers.
Yeah.
And it seems like they're trying to phase it out. I feel like these – owners and the competition committee that makes these rules, they like got drunk at a bar one night and they're like, you know what we should do? Yeah, let's make the kickers do this. And they can't start until the ball is kicked.
Like their eyes have to be closed.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, they might make us do like the bat spin and then kick it left footed if you're right footed. Like, I don't know. To me, it doesn't make sense, but
yeah,
these guys are smarter than me.
It's interesting how they'll plan just moving forward, how teams will start building their rosters for special teams. Because like you said, it does kind of feel like shying away from certain type of kickers now. But also just the guys that are going to be returning now, because it does kind of shift that. I heard an interesting thing the other day, actually, on one of my podcasts I was doing. And the guy was like, I think this makes way for running backs. And that's why he believes running backs got more money this offseason than they had the last few seasons. because he just says it makes sense. What player on the field is used to working in small space and getting the most out of that small space, crowded, you know, in a crowded area, running backs. And so he was like, I feel like this is the perfect time for running backs to kind of take over in that position. But then what does that do with some of these guys that were return specialists? And those are kind of getting shown
phased
away
out.
Too.
Yeah, like phased out as well.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And, you know, back when I was playing, we had like core special teams players, like four or five guys that were like the guys. They mm-hmm. played on all six special teams, essentially. And now I don't think you're going to have that as much. And
yeah.
So we'll see what happens over time with it. But to me, it's strange. And I'm sure a lot of former kickers and current kickers feel the same way.
So you were a really good kicker at Louisiana Tech, as most people know, and then drafted in the fifth round. Did you think you would be drafted?
Fortunately, I had a good agent,
okay.
and he was really informative with me and talking to teams and who was potentially going to be drafting a kicker. And that year, there were three drafted kickers. I was the second one, and he told me it's either going to be San Diego or Jacksonville. And so San Diego chose Nate Kading in the third round. And he called me. He's like, it's going to be tomorrow. You're going to get drafted tomorrow. I'm like, okay. So the fifth round came around. Jacksonville had two draft picks in the fifth round. They took me. And it's kind of crazy that he knew that that was going to happen. But it couldn't have been a better place for me to come, because it's very similar to where I grew up in Texas and went to school in Louisiana. Like, similar people, similar lifestyle. And now it's my home. And, you know, things work out for a reason.
What is the process like that? Well, what was it for you, and what is it for kickers? Because obviously we see all of the now what we have from the combine to pro days to all of these things leading up to the draft. What did that look like for you?
For me, it was a lot of training, just getting ready, getting prepared. And like I said, my agent was really good and just telling me exactly how the process is going to go. Going to the NFL combine, I went there, did really well. Then had a pro day with San Diego, Jacksonville, the Jets, a few others, and, you know, where they come and personally work you out. And so the San Diego one, I actually tanked it on purpose so I wouldn't go there. I kicked left-footed just to mess with them.
You did for real?
Yeah, because I could kick left-footed.
Oh,
I can make
wow.
50 yarders left.
But you
footed.
Didn't, because you knew you didn't want to go to
San
Diego.
I didn't
want to
go to San Diego. So I tanked it.
I never knew that.
Yep. It's kind of a, there's only like four people that know that.
Well, now more.
Yeah. You're going to have a golf show with the Jags that we broke that news, and then this, and now publicly.
Yeah. I would love to talk to the special teams coach, because he was there for a few years, and we actually played him my rookie year at San Diego. And he was like looking at me like,
wait a minute.
Kicking right footed. Like, yeah.
Did you ever kick left footed in high school, college?
Not in a game.
In the NFL?
But I would
no.
do it.
Okay.
I would do it in like pregame to mess with the other kickers. Because I'd kick 65 yarders one direction, then turn around and kick left footed the other direction 55 yards and make them.
Oh, wow.
And
they're like, what's going
oh,
on?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that's great.
That's my soccer background.
Yeah.
What is there a place that was most difficult for you to kick?
I'd say Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Anywhere in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Late in the year when the weather's bad and they have natural grass, mm-hmm. it gets really tough. So
yeah.
Pittsburgh, Cleveland, I mean, New York is tough. Even though they had turf, that's easier for footing. But
yeah.
Anywhere late in the year, that's why I respect so many of these kickers, especially Justin Tucker,
mm-hmm.
that kicks in Baltimore
mm-hmm.
in bad weather and does what he does.
Yeah.
And any guys that, like Robbie Gould
mm-hmm.
in Chicago.
Love Robbie.
I mean, like the fact that he did what he did for as long as he did there,
yeah.
it's impressive. So me kicking here and complaining when it gets to 55 degrees. Yeah.
And they're in the negatives.
Correct. Yeah.
With the wind chill and everything.
And the wind, yeah.
And the wind, yeah. Well, we had a quarterback here at one point who couldn't throw in the wind. So I fully respect.
We had a
yeah.
quarterback here that couldn't throw.
That's also true.
Hey.
So kickers prefer turf. Is that correct?
I would. Yes.
Okay.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
But obviously the rest of the athletes hate turf. They all want natural
yeah,
grass.
Yeah, whatever. Those aren't the real athletes.
But that is, it's all about footing?
Oh, yeah, for
okay.
sure. The consistent footing
yeah.
for your plant foot. Yeah.
That makes sense. All right. So let's talk golf, since you are going to do a golf show with the Jaguars. how's your golf game going, and how closely do you pay attention to the PGA Tour?
My golf game's pretty good
now. Okay, good.
We'll see this afternoon. But yeah, it's been good. I've shot some pretty good scores in the last couple weeks.
So. Are we talking high 60s?
A few weeks ago, I shot 10 under.
Okay.
Shot 62 at Deerwood. And then the next day, shot 67.
Okay.
And then 68. So it's been good.
That's
and
really good.
It doesn't mean that I think I can be a professional golfer by any means, because people ask me that all the time. Like, I heard you're trying to go pro. No. these guys are a little – it would be like me challenging a middle school kicker to a kicking competition. It's not the same. So it's good. And, yes, I do follow the PGA Tour. And, I mean, that's my passion is golf now.
And so can anyone catch Scheffler?
I mean, right now, no.
No. Yeah.
I would like to – if we could look up official world golf ranking points, he's probably ahead by a large margin. And when Tiger was in his prime and official golf world golf mm-hmm. rankings were a thing, he was ahead of the second place by second to, like, 200th place. So I would assume Scottie Scheffler is there, and he is extremely impressive. And – he has to have the best hands in the world with his mm-hmm. footwork.
Right, exactly.
That's what I was just about to say. Watching his feet, sometimes I'm like, how do you even...
He's got to be a good bowler because it looks like he's bowling.
He also, I mentioned this to some clients yesterday, that he's got to be like the oldest 27-year-old. I saw someone tweet that out and I stole it. And they were like, he's 27?
Oh, no,
and
my,
I was like,
my wife is like, what is he, like 40?
Right.
Like, no, I
think
he's like
beard,
mid-20s.
Yeah, he has the longer face and mm-hmm. the beard and everything. Yeah. So Scottie Scheffler's world golf ranking points right now, 629.6. The next highest is 344.42, and that's Rory.
Huge margin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
huge margin.
Massive margin. And also Rory isn't playing as well as he once was. Mm-hmm. So the fact that it's Rory next is also kind of surprising, because it feels like it should be someone else in between Scotty and the next guy.
Oh, he's very, very impressive. And I mean, I would love to like watch him hit golf balls through an entire round in person with him. So that's going to be a goal of mine, to try and play
one of those
around
charity events. I'm sure he has to.
And we can figure something.
I saw one video that was like, this is what everyone, after watching the Masters and, of course, just Scotty play golf in general, this is what everyone's going to be doing at the range and
trying to get their footwork.
That's not a good idea.
I know. What are your feelings like the LIV v PGA Tour?
I mean, it's goofy. It's all about money. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't blame any of the guys that went to LIV because it's life-changing money. It's generational wealth.
Yeah.
I don't know what the contracts tell them, what they can and can't do. If they break the contract, you know, what is going to happen to them? It does feel a little like dirty money mm-hmm. because of where the money's coming from. But it's hard to blame someone if they offer you $100 million. And there were reports this week that Rory was offered $850 million or something.
Yeah.
But his agent came out and said that wasn't true.
Yeah.
But I think eventually they're going to come to a point where they do merge and they can play events together. And there's, you know, not as much animosity, but it's goofy.
Yeah.
I heard about this years ago from a PGA Tour lawyer. Mm-hmm. He told me that this was going to happen. And I told him he was crazy for thinking that. And he was 100% right.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hate it. And if the LIV golfers, to me, who turn their back on the PGA Tour, never can play in another PGA Tour event or a major, I'd be fine with that, because they, in my opinion, sold their souls for that blood money.
I agree.
What about the – because now people – we saw, I guess, DeChambeau played well at the Masters, but a lot of them struggled, a lot of the LIV guys, badly, DJ and Rom. And a lot of people are saying maybe it's because that competition that they're playing at LIV isn't as – serious as what they do on a week basis?
Right.
No.
No. I mean, it's still golf.
Yeah.
And these guys are still world-class golfers. And they know what they're doing. It doesn't matter if they're playing 54 holes for a tournament or 72 holes. They're still really talented golfers. And mm-hmm. they're ready to play. So I don't think that's a talking point and shouldn't be.
That's interesting.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we've got a couple more segments here with Jaguars kicker, former Jaguars kicker, I should say,
ooh,
Josh Scobie. Or just
I do
current.
Have dreams that I'm
still
the
there.
Jaguar, yeah,
I like
it's
that.
It's weird, though. I can never tie my shoes.
I hate dreams like that. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 10 to Next on 82.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels.
This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010XL.
Whiskey eyes, some ashtray breath on a churred rock gravel road. What the hell did I do last night? That's the story of my life, like trying to remember words to a song nobody wrote.
One last Jamie Johnson song. This is That Lonesome Song. Josh, you just said you didn't even know this was Jamie Johnson.
Awesome.
He's so good. So incredibly talented. So if you want to go see Jamie Johnson, it's the What of You tour coming to the Amp in St. Augustine Thursday, June 20th. Be car number 3 at 641-1010. Car number 3, 641-1010. And Taylor, the people, the listeners, they know. As soon as they started to hear Jamie Johnson, those
already lighting up.
Yes, those lines. You cannot win these, but you can go to Ticketmaster.com right now and buy them, Josh.
Okay. All right.
Actually, you don't work here, so you be car number 3 right now at 641-1010.
Pull up your phone.
You'll win the tickets. Again, Jamie Johnson coming to the Amp in St. Augustine. If you've never been to the Amp, highly recommend. And if you've never seen Jamie Johnson, well, I haven't either, but I will be there Thursday, June 20th. I am already so excited about that tour and concert. And by the way, Josh won't be with us tomorrow. Tom McManus is going to hang out with us following Jaguars today. We have another set of concert tickets to give away tomorrow.
Oh.
Should I tell the people who these are for?
NSYNC.
Okay. Oh, I would want those ones.
No, unfortunately not NSYNC for certain people. No. Luke Bryan.
Shut up.
Yeah, Luke Bryan is coming to the ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena Thursday, June 13th. So tomorrow we will have 3 pairs of tickets to give away to go see Luke Bryan. So, of course, you're going to be listening to us anyways, so make sure to listen. All right, so in the break, Josh, you told me that you have one really good James Harrison story that you can tell on air.
Man.
Others that you can't, but we need to hear the one that you can tell on air. For people who don't know, James Harrison probably has the meanest look about him for any Steeler. I mean, there's
any
a ton of Steelers.
Any
human being. His neck is massive, and I would never want to cross him.
Well, yeah. So the brief time that I was with Pittsburgh.
I love how you refer to it like that.
Yeah, because it was only 4 games in like 6 weeks. But I had a few James Harrison encounters because that dude is a scary individual, and he tries to be scary.
I love it.
And everyone's intimidated by him, and they know, like, don't mess with Debo. That's him.
His nickname was Debo?
Debo.
Before Debo Samuel, obviously, but more toward
we're talking
the
about
movie
Friday.
Friday. Yeah.
Debo. Mm-hmm. So the first interaction I had with this guy, I'd just gotten traded. I flew out there early in the morning, get my bags, go to the facility for the Steelers, and they're in a team meeting. And, of course, like I have to walk in a middle, like right at the beginning of a team meeting. And they put me right up front
in the
like front row table. And there's like a table of 5 players. And it's James Harrison to my left, myself, the punter, the snapper, and another guy. And Mike Tomlin walks in and, you know, starts the meeting or whatever. And James Harrison immediately just slaps me in the chest as hard as he can. Just boom, hits me in the chest. And I'm like, what? He said, pass it on. I'm like, okay. So I slap the punter next to me. He slaps the long snapper. He slaps him. And it immediately just goes around the room. And everyone slaps each other. And then the meeting starts. So I'm, you know, my heart's pounding. I'm like, what just happened? So I'm like, I guess that's what they do here. So after the meeting, James Harrison's like, last kicker I did that to didn't pass it on. So I kept hitting him.
That was a dumb move.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate you letting me know. But that dude, there's a reason he's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. He's a heck of a player, but the most intimidating football player I've ever been around in my life.
He just by pictures is intimidating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I was saying, like, as far as linebackers go, I mean, and the Steelers have had a lot of guys that I think are intimidating, but I think they just had James Harrison come out before their playoff game, I want to say. Either that or was it towards the end of the season. And even now at 45 years old, you look at him and you're like,
he would
still
kill somebody.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, if he was going to fight Mike Tyson, like, I don't know who I would take as far as that's
concerned. I want him on my side, so fortunately, I think I'm on his side. I don't know.
Josh is like, I'll slap anybody you want me to slap.
Who do you want me to slap, James? Just let me know.
So you played for Jack Del Rio,
mm-hmm.
and Gus Bradley.
Gus and who was our Mike Mularkey?
Oh, that's right, Mike Mularkey for one season. Yep. But that's when the Jaguars did. They but they did the Women's Football 101 that year.
Yeah,
it was the only time they've ever done it, and it was that season. And that's when they let the women go out. And some of my favorite stories are from that day. It was my 30th birthday, so I grabbed some of my friends, and I was like, "This is what I want to do for my 30th birthday." They, of course, thought I was crazy, but that's neither here nor there. So we did the running back drills, and of course, they're like, "Who wants to go first?" And here I am thinking I'm, you know, an athlete, whatever. So they give me the football. They tell me, you know, hold it high and tight, right? And then they have the sticks to, like, try and knock it out. Well, right away, they knock it out. I did not have it high and tight. And then they had all the other women start screaming, "You suck!" right at me because they wanted to... the women to understand what it feels like to be a running back when they fumble. And then we got to the kicking drills, and I told Josh the story when we were at Bishop Kenny. My first field goal and only field goal attempt hit a guy right where the sun don't shine because I was a former soccer player, so I drive the ball. I don't kick the ball up, right?
Yeah.
So I did not get my foot under it enough, and it went straight at him. And then when it was my time to come back around in line, he was like, "No, you're out."
Not
and so the next time I tried it, a field goal attempt was when we were doing Lauren's Lane, and Josh was kind enough, and I was like, "Look, I'm never going to make the field goal." And he's like, "I promise you, by the end of the session, you will." And I made one and only one, and we got that one on video.
I always think, because on college game day, they'll do, like, Pat McAfee will do, or they'll kick a field goal. But it'll be, like, in a lane where people are just surrounded, and I'm like, this is so dangerous, first of all. But multiple times, people on the side just getting hit in the face, hit in the chest, because the ball, most of these people have probably never kicked a or tried to kick a field goal in their lives.
Right. And it looks like they're on a slip and slide when they're doing it.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, so we talked about golf. We've talked about what your sons are doing. What other sports are you interested in now outside of football and golf and what your kids play, baseball and soccer?
I mean, really, it's baseball. I mean, the kids play travel baseball. Or not, I guess not travel. They're at Jack's Beach Baseball.
Oh, okay.
So we are up there, it feels like, 8 days a week. Just nonstop with them. And so I help coach my older son's team and watch my younger son. And
what positions do they play?
Both of them are like infielders, like second base, shortstop, those type of, that's kind of what I did growing up. And, you know, that hopefully one day they'll develop into good little athletes. And right now they're kind of small. I hope my wife's not listening.
I was going to say, did she play sports?
She did not. She was a cheerleader.
Okay. That's a sport. I mean, I get it though.
It's not a sport, but they're kind of small right now because my wife is small.
Yes.
And you know, hopefully they get my size one day. But I was kind of a late bloomer and didn't hit a growth spurt till like junior year of college, or junior year of high school, that is. But yeah, that's what we do, and it's all about the kids right now and getting them to be the best human beings they can be. And fortunately, they're good kids.
That's awesome. And that's the important part, like you said. All right, let's get it to RJ, the NBA. Tell us what's the latest when it comes to the NBA play-in tournament.
So Jimmy Butler, unfortunately, has been ruled out for the Chicago Bulls-Miami Heat matchup for the 8th seed. The winner will get the Boston Celtics in round one. The Lakers won their play-in game. Merry Christmas. You're going to get swept by the Denver Nuggets. And now Zion Williamson has been considered out with a hamstring injury.
That lasted 2 minutes.
Yeah, the Pelicans will be going against the Sacramento Kings for the 8th spot. The winner will face the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, very exciting. And for people who don't know, RJ has a show, not a podcast, on Sundays called Open Gym. You are a radio host, not a podcaster. I'm sure you've done podcasts before, but this Sunday, 11 a.m. on 1010XL, right, RJ?
We'll be moved to 12 with Gibby's show, River City Hardball.
All right.
Make sure to listen to that. But at 12, we'll get it started.
All right.
RJ, what are the chances that Kobe puts up another 40-plus against the Heat?
I say slim to none, but
don't put my hopes down.
Listen, I say it's slim to none. I do have the Bulls potentially winning this game, just because when you do see your best player go down, I think that's going to take a couple days for Miami. But it's going to be anybody's game at that point. Right now, I have the edge going to Chicago, but definitely going to be interesting going into the weekend because it's going to be a quick turnaround for whoever wins that game, and you have to go against the vaunted Boston Celtics.
Yeah, and then Kings Pelicans. What do you think about that one?
I have Sacramento winning this one with Zion Williamson out. Again, it's the same thing with Miami. Your best player is down. CJ McCollum, if you're relying on him to be that guy, this would be a great game for Brandon Ingram to show why he got paid what he got paid a couple off seasons ago. But Sacramento looks like a team that wants to be in the playoffs and honestly thinks that they can defeat OKC in the first round, even being an 8 seed. So both of these games are going to be very, very interesting to see, because I feel like both teams that were the 7 seed, I think everyone assumed that both of these teams would stay the 7 seed, but now they have to play one game for their life. So this is going to be very interesting. I'll be locked in.
Yes, we all will be. Right, Josh? You'll be locked into the NBA?
I'll be locked in about game 6 of the finals.
A little later.
Yeah, I'm not a big basketball guy, but I did go to a Nuggets 76ers game back in January with a group of friends.
And that's fun.
Just randomly, some friends of ours booked tickets to that and got us some crazy good seats. So I got to see those giant mammoth human beings up close and personal. And seeing Jokic in person blew my mind how big he is and how big these guys are and how athletic they are. That was one sport that I didn't play growing up, and for good reason. These guys are like freaks of nature.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're not at least, I feel like 6'6", you don't belong. I saw that Boban, am I saying that right? Boban, RJ? Boban.
Yes.
He made sure to miss 2 free throws in a row, so that way the crowd got free chicken.
Yeah.
That was the promotion.
Like, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I was like, this is an odd promotion that you're going to give it when it's missed free throws instead of made free throws, but I'm not the person in charge.
Sorry. It's also pronounced Boban, not Boban.
Boban, okay.
A couple questions for Josh on the text line.
Ooh. Oh, go for it.
So number one, someone said, this was back when we were talking about the stadium, when they are building the stadium, what are your thoughts on where they play? Because, there's been the rumors of Orlando, Gainesville,
Daytona.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think Orlando should be out, number one.
Definitely.
I'm with you on that.
Mainly because I don't like Orlando.
The drive.
Traffic.
Nobody likes Orlando.
Sucks.
The people from Orlando don't like Orlando.
I think logistically the best place would be Gainesville, just because it's a short drive. They already have everything that you need. The stadium is big enough. It'll probably be tough to get that, because I'm sure Florida doesn't want the field being beaten up on a Sunday, maybe after a day after they played. But I think that would be the best place.
Yeah, and you can arrange it to where it's you try to do every other weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So when it's Florida away. Other questions?
Yeah,
Taylor?
And then someone else said, when the 050 said, when I have a baby boy, my goal is to get him into kicking and training as young and constant as possible to try and help him get a scholarship into middle, high school, and college. Is that a smart plan?
It's not smart to start them out really young trying to kick a football. I would say kick a soccer ball early, because you really can't develop the leg strength you need to kick a football until kids hit like 14, 15 years old. You really can't. They can't get the ball in the air.
Yeah.
So I would say concentrate on kicking a soccer ball first, even if he doesn't play soccer. Have him kick the soccer ball first and develop that leg strength. And then once, he hits the, post-puberty age, 14, 15, 16, that's when you start. Because, every kicker that I talked to, including myself, didn't start until later, because you don't develop that leg strength until you're that age.
Makes sense. So you're only going to get that advice from one of the best kickers in Jaguars history. I'll say the best kicker in Jaguars history. How's that? We've got one segment to go here with former Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie on 1010XL on 2.5 FM.
This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
Light up your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010XL.
Unfortunately, I don't have tickets to give away to go see the Allman Brothers, but we are playing this song because Dickie Betts, who wrote Ramblin' Man, unfortunately at the age of 80, passed away today. Not sure the cause of death, but his family did let everyone know. So if you're an Allman Brothers fan as much as I am, then you certainly know this song and obviously lots of Allman Brothers songs. But we did lose Dickie Betts today, and I saw a year ago today is when Jimmy Buffett passed away.
Oh, wow.
So all those make me so sad because this is Allman Brothers is probably one of my like top five all time favorite bands.
Is it?
Yes.
I don't think I knew that.
Probably not just because it's not in today's you know era. But yes, I feel like I was when you were from Jacksonville, born and raised in Jacksonville, Southern rock. Like we basically created Southern rock. I feel like between Lynyrd Skynyrd and 38 Special and all those. There's another Molly Hatchet. And so Allman Brothers not from Jacksonville, but it has a Jacksonville tie. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it just made me sad. So I wanted to share with other people who also love the Allman Brothers that we did lose Dickie Betts today. By the way, very important tonight, everyone, I need you to stay up at 9 o'clock and watch the Florida gymnastics team compete in the semifinals of the national championship meet against Alabama, Oklahoma, and Utah. That's an incredibly hard bracket. The other semifinal starts at 4:30 today. That's Arkansas, Cal, LSU, Stanford. If you were to ask me who's going to get out of the first bracket that I just mentioned, I'm going to say LSU and Arkansas because I think SEC teams have done really well all season, but it'll probably end up being or it could end up being LSU and Cal. And then I have no idea when it comes to Alabama, Florida, Oklahoma, Utah, other than Oklahoma. Oklahoma's been the best team all season long. Does your wife watch gymnastics since she was a cheerleader?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Only when the Olympics are on.
Okay. And that makes sense. I went to gymnastics meets when I was a student at Florida, and it is so much fun. I had a friend who's actually a Georgia fan, but take her daughter to a gymnastics meet in Gainesville this year and said they can't wait to go back. Her daughter's into gymnastics, and they loved it so much. Even though she's a Georgia fan, she was like, oh, my goodness, the O'Connell Center is rocking, and it was so much fun. But Josh, former Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie, has been hanging with us all day today. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for having
me. We really appreciate it.
Can you do this more often?
Can I share another Anton Harrison food take?
Yes. Yes,
so
I
have you
these.
Seen Anton Harrison's food takes on Twitter, Josh?
I have not, no.
So he has some hot takes when it comes to food, some of which have been that he put sugar in his grits, and we say no, we put salt and butter down in the South, but other places do put sugar.
So strange to me.
Yeah, it's a little weird. He did no pineapple on pizza was another one that he posted.
Yesterday, no ketchup, no hot sauce on eggs. Yep. He doesn't like either of those
things. No pulp and orange juice was another one, I think.
If you drink the pulp and orange juice, I think is what it's weird.
Weird, yeah, something like that.
I'm a no pulp orange juice person.
Yeah, same. But so the newest one that he has is melted cheese belongs on nachos, not fries, not glizzies, not broccoli. I'm like, I disagree with this one. Melted cheese goes on everything.
Yes, and especially broccoli. How are you supposed to eat broccoli without some melted cheese?
And French fries, come on.
And what was the other fries, one?
Glizzies, so hot dogs.
What is that?
Yeah, I don't know what a glizzy is.
A glizzy?
How?
It's like another term for a hot dog.
See, I need Josh to be on the show more often because we're closer to the same age, so we understand Rizzies. Or don't understand some of this new. Is this new or is this?
I don't think it's
northern
new.
Thing.
Is that like that's why Rizzy, I'm like, but glizzy is that?
RJ, have you ever heard a glizzy as a hot dog?
Yeah, but it's been because of like younger terminology. There's a couple streamers
I get it. Scobie and I over here, we're in
the aliens. I don't think it's a young. When they come here.
I think it's an older thing, but it may be like a area, like certain areas say it a little bit more. But like I know Washington for sure, like Washington D.C. that area,
That
they say that's what they say. I've heard the word. A lot of people in Chicago will use the term, so I don't know if it's like newer or older, but
it's
it is
dumber.
Something
that's for sure.
Yeah, that's weird.
I'm with.
Why don't we just say hot dog?
Exactly.
So we don't have to explain it.
Exactly. And it's a hot dog, a sandwich. Which is a whole nother debate. Okay. All right, but that's going to do it for us. Oh, I did want to mention the Jumbo Shrimp won 16-4 last night.
Nice.
Jonah Bride hit 2 home runs, and the team hit 5 total home runs. Iceman playoffs begin tonight.
Yes.
Puck drops at 7 o'clock. Go Iceman is right. Thanks again to Josh Scobie for hanging out with us today. Tom McManus will be in with us tomorrow for Taylor Dahl, for RJ Saunders. For Josh Scobie, I'm Lauren Brooks. Don't go anywhere. XL Primetime is coming up next, and these heels are made for talking. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You keep lying when you ought to be truthful. And you can